Okay, so let's dive into something I think we can all relate to. Imagine this. You're stuck in a meeting, right? And that presentation is just dragging on and on, or maybe you're stuck in traffic and suddenly, bam, you get hit with this super intense, urgent need to go to the bathroom, like right now. But the thing is, your bladder isn't actually full. It's like your body's playing a trick on you.
Yeah, that feeling, that gotta go now feeling, even when you know you don't really have to go. That's a classic sign of what we call overactive bladder or OAB. And it's way more common than you might think. It affects over 10% of the population, and it actually becomes even more common as we age.
So we've got this medical paper here all about OAB, and we're going to deep dive into it. What exactly is it? What causes it? And most importantly, what can you do about it? Because, I mean, it's definitely more than just like holding it in, right?
And thankfully, there are some pretty effective treatments out there. But one thing that's important to understand about OAB is that it's actually a diagnosis of exclusion.
Okay, a diagnosis of exclusion.
Yeah, that means doctors need to rule out other conditions that might have similar symptoms before they can definitively say, okay, this is OAB.
So it's not as simple as just like feeling like you have to pee a lot. There's a whole process involved in figuring it out.
Exactly. So to break it down, let's start by defining what we mean by OAB. So basically, it's characterized by these unstable bladder contractions.
And then stable bladder contract.
Yeah, it's like your bladder is kind of having a mind of its own and it's squeezing when it shouldn't be. This can lead to a whole bunch of annoying symptoms, like that sudden gotta go urge to pee, needing to go like 8 or more times in a 24-hour period.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of bathroom breaks. And then there's nocturia.
Nocturia.
Yeah, nocturia means waking up multiple times during the night to pee.
Ugh, I can see how that would be incredibly disruptive to your life, especially those nighttime bathroom trips. Sleep is precious.
Totally. It's exhausting. And to add to that, a lot of people with OAB also experience urge incontinence, which is accidentally leaking urine because of that strong, sudden urge.
So, not fun at all. Okay, so we've got the symptoms down, but what actually causes this bladder rebellion in the first place?
Well, that's the interesting part. OAB itself is considered idiopathic.
Idiopathic.
Yeah, meaning the exact cause is still a bit of a mystery.
Oh, interesting.
But we do know that there are certain risk factors that can make you more likely to develop it. Some of these things are modifiable, meaning you can control them, like your lifestyle choices, and some are unfortunately non-modifiable, things you can't control.
Okay, so let's talk about the things you can control, those lifestyle choices. What are we talking about here?
So some things to consider are your intake of alcohol, caffeine, whether you smoke. All of this can irritate the bladder. Your weight also plays a role. And believe it or not, even certain foods and drinks like carbonated beverages and spicy foods can actually be triggers.
So if you're noticing those gotta-go urges, maybe it's time to cut back on the coffee and the jalapenos.
Exactly. And the good news is that making those changes, even small ones, early on can really make a difference in either preventing or managing OAB.
That makes sense. Okay, so those are things you can control. What about the risk factors that are out of your hands? What about genetics? Does that play a role in all of this?
Well, age is a big one. OAB becomes more common as people get older. Sex also plays a role, as it's more common in women. And then certain medical conditions like metabolic syndrome and benign prostatic hyperplasia can also increase the risk.
Okay, so it sounds like getting a proper diagnosis is really important, like making sure you're actually treating the right thing.
You got it. Before anyone jumps to conclusions about OAB, it's super important to rule out other conditions that could be causing those similar symptoms.
Right. So what are some of the other usual suspects? What else could be mimicking OAB?
So we're talking things like urinary tract infections, UTIs, bladder stones, even bladder cancer in some cases. Yeah, and sometimes neurological diseases like stroke, multiple sclerosis, diabetic neuropathy.
Gosh, that's a pretty wide range of possibilities.
It is.
So it sounds like you really need a thorough evaluation to get to the bottom of it.
Absolutely. Doctors will take a detailed medical history, do a physical exam, run some tests like a urinalysis, and then there's something called a bladder diary.
A bladder diary.
Yeah, where you keep track of your fluid intake and your bathroom trips.
A bladder diary. Well, there you
Oh.
go. Something I never thought I'd hear.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say you've gone through all of that and all those other conditions have been ruled out. It really is OAB. What happens next? Is there like a one-size-fits-all treatment plan?
Not exactly. The great thing is that doctors usually follow what we call a stepwise treatment path for OAB. So basically what that means is that the approach is tailored to your individual needs and progresses in stages.
Oh, okay. So it's more like a journey to find what works best for you. So let's imagine you're starting to experience OAB symptoms. Where does this journey begin? What's step one on this path to relief?
Step one focuses on what we call conservative management. It all starts with lifestyle changes and behavioral techniques.
So we're kind of circling back to those modifiable risk factors we talked about before.
Exactly. We're talking losing weight if you need to, cutting back on those bladder irritants like the caffeine and alcohol. And this might surprise you, but making sure you're not dealing with constipation.
Constipation,
Yeah.
really? That's fascinating. I never would have thought those two things would be connected.
You wouldn't think so, but they are. When you're constipated, all that pressure from the full bowel can actually press on your bladder and make those urgency symptoms even worse.
Oh, wow. I would have never guessed that. So along with those adjustments, what else falls under this conservative management umbrella?
Well, figuring out how much you should be drinking throughout the day and when is important. We call that fluid optimization. You don't want to be overhydrated, especially close to bedtime. And then, of course, there's good old
Let's
exercise.
hope you're going to say that. I'm all about those endorphins.
Yes. Specifically, pelvic floor exercises are key here. They help strengthen the muscles that control urination. And then there's something called bladder training.
Bladder training.
Yeah, it basically involves techniques like scheduling your bathroom breaks and doing urge suppression exercises.
Urge suppression. That sounds intense. What exactly does that entail?
It's actually pretty straightforward. So when you feel that sudden urge to go, you use different techniques to suppress it, like contracting your pelvic floor muscles or focusing on your breathing.
So you're kind of retraining your bladder to be a bit more cooperative.
Exactly. And it's amazing how much we can actually influence our bodies with these techniques. And the good news is that these conservative measures are more effective than you might think. Studies have shown that up to 50% of people see improvement just with these lifestyle changes and behavioral therapies alone.
Wow, that's incredibly encouraging. But what if those first-line strategies just aren't enough? What's the next step on the journey?
Well, if those lifestyle changes and the bladder training aren't cutting it, that's when we might start thinking about bringing in medications.
Ah, so pills to the rescue. What kind of medications are we talking about here?
Well, one of the most commonly prescribed types of medications are called anticholinergics. Yeah,
Anticholinergics.
think of it this way. Your bladder is getting all these signals to squeeze, even when it shouldn't. And anticholinergics are basically like hitting the mute button on those signals. They give your bladder a chance to chill out.
So they basically calm the bladder down.
Yeah.
I've heard that one of the side effects of anticholinergics can be dry mouth. Is there anything you can do to deal with that?
Definitely. Chewing sugar-free gum or sucking on hard candies can help stimulate saliva production. Staying hydrated is important too, but sipping on water throughout the day is usually better than chugging large amounts all at once.
Okay, good to know. So those are the anticholinergics. Are there any other types of medications that are commonly used for OAB?
Yes. There's another type of medication called a beta-3 agonist, and this one actually works by relaxing the bladder muscle, which increases its capacity and reduces those frequent urges to go.
So it's like giving your bladder a little more breathing room.
Exactly. But just like with any medication, it's really important to work closely with your doctor to find the one that's right for you and the dosage that's appropriate. There can be potential side effects to consider, and your doctor can help you weigh the benefits and the risks.
That makes a lot of sense. So we've got step one, conservative management, step two, medication. But what if those two approaches still aren't providing enough relief? Where do we go from there?
Well, that's when we might start looking into what we call minimally invasive procedures. These are for people who either aren't finding relief with medication or they're having side effects that they just can't tolerate.
Okay, minimally invasive. So we're not talking about full-blown surgery here.
Right. These procedures are done with, minimal disruption to the body. One option is injections of botulinum toxin, A, directly into the bladder muscle. You might know botulinum toxin by its more common name, Botox.
Botox for overactive bladder. That's wild. I always thought Botox was just for wrinkles.
It actually has a lot of medical uses. In the case of OAB, the Botox temporarily paralyzes the bladder muscle, which reduces those involuntary
So
contractions.
it's kind of like giving your bladder a timeout from all that squeezing.
Exactly. And the effects typically last for 6 to 12 months, and then the procedure can be repeated if needed.
Fascinating. Okay, so that's one minimally invasive option. What are some of the others?
There's also something called sacral nerve stimulation. And it involves this little device that gets implanted under your skin, usually in the lower back. And it sends these mild electrical pulses to the sacral nerves, which are the nerves that are responsible for controlling bladder function.
So it's like a little pacemaker for your bladder.
Exactly. And by stimulating those nerves, the device can help regulate those bladder contractions, reducing both the urgency and the frequency.
Wow, it's amazing what technology can do these days. Is this a permanent solution?
It can be a long-term solution, but it does require a minor surgical procedure to implant the device.
Right. And I imagine, like any surgery, there are potential risks and complications that go along with that.
There are always risks like infection or bleeding, but overall, sacral nerve stimulation is considered a safe and effective option for people who haven't found relief with those more conservative treatments.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
You mentioned another minimally invasive option earlier called peripheral tibial nerve stimulation. How is that different from sacral nerve stimulation?
So peripheral tibial nerve stimulation, or PTNS, is even less invasive than sacral nerve stimulation. It involves placing a thin needle electrode near the tibial nerve in your ankle.
Wait, so you're stimulating a nerve in the ankle and that can somehow affect the bladder?
It might sound surprising, but yes. The tibial nerve is actually part of the same nerve pathway that connects to the bladder. So by stimulating that nerve, we can influence the signals that are traveling to the bladder and potentially improve those OAB symptoms.
So it's like you're sending a message upstream to tell the bladder to calm down.
You got it. And PTNS usually involves a series of weekly treatments, with each session lasting about 30 minutes.
So unlike the sacral nerve stimulation, which is more of like a one-time thing, this is something that you would need to go back for repeated treatments.
Correct. And while PTNS is generally well tolerated, some people do report mild discomfort during the stimulation.
Okay, so we have these two minimally invasive options: sacral nerve stimulation and peripheral tibial nerve stimulation. How do you decide which one is right for you?
Well, that's a decision that you would make in consultation with your urologist. They'll take into account things like your overall health, the severity of your symptoms, and your own preferences.
So it's about finding that personalized approach again.
Exactly. And it's really important to have an open and honest conversation with your doctor about the potential benefits and risks of each procedure.
This is all so fascinating. It sounds like there's really a whole toolbox full of options for managing OAB, from simple lifestyle tweaks to high-tech implants. It's really about finding the right tool or combination of tools to get you back in control.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah.
And the most important thing to remember is that if you're struggling with OAB, you don't have to suffer in silence. There is help available, and there's absolutely no shame in seeking treatment.
You're so right. It's incredibly common, and you don't have to let it control your life. With the right approach, you can regain control and start living your life to the fullest again. Now, before we wrap up our deep dive, I want to circle back to that initial question about the mind-body connection. We talked about mindfulness and its potential role in managing OAB symptoms. But what about some of the other mind-body practices out there? Things like yoga or tai chi, could those offer any benefits as well?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, and one that researchers are definitely starting to explore more. You know, there's this growing understanding that our physical and mental well-being are like really deeply interconnected.
So the idea is that if you improve your overall well-being, you might actually be able to indirectly improve conditions like OAB.
Exactly. Techniques like yoga and tai chi, which combine physical postures, breathing exercises, and meditation, have been shown to help reduce stress, improve flexibility and balance, and promote relaxation. And all of those things, could potentially contribute to better bladder control.
I love that. It's like a ripple effect. You're addressing the whole person, rather than just zeroing in on a single symptom.
It really is. It's a more holistic approach that
Yeah.
acknowledges just how complex the interplay is between our minds and our bodies and even, our environment.
Yeah, it's empowering to think that we might have more control over our health than we realize.
I agree. And while more research is definitely needed to like pinpoint exactly how these mind-body practices impact OAB specifically, they do offer a range of other benefits that can really, boost your overall well-being.
So it's a win-win. Even if the impact on bladder control is small, you're still getting all these other amazing benefits.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that these practices aren't meant to replace conventional medical treatment, but
Yeah.
they can be a really valuable complement to those approaches.
So it's about finding that personalized blend of treatments that works best for you. A combination of lifestyle changes, medication if you need it, maybe a minimally invasive procedure, and then, those mind-body techniques layered in to support your overall well-being.
Absolutely. It's about taking a multifaceted approach that really empowers you to take an active role in managing your OAB. and improving your quality of life.
This whole deep dive has been so eye-opening. I feel like I have a totally new understanding of OAB, and a better listener does too.
I hope so. The key takeaway here is that OAB is common and it's treatable. You know, don't let shame or embarrassment keep you from getting the help you need.
Early diagnosis and treatment can make a world of difference. And remember, you are not alone. There are so many healthcare professionals, resources, and even online communities out there dedicated to supporting people with OAB.
Absolutely. So reach out, ask questions, and advocate for your health. You deserve to live a life that's not limited by OAB.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And on that note, we'll wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. But we want to leave you with one final thought to ponder as you continue on your journey.
We've talked a lot about the impact of, you know, diet and lifestyle on OAB, but could personalized nutrition plans also play a role in managing symptoms? Something to chew on until next time.
That's a fantastic question for our listener to explore. We've given you the roadmap. Now it's time to navigate your own path toward better bladder health. Until next time, stay curious and keep on learning.